Welcome to the Bolo Brief. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome to this week's Bolo Brief. Over the past 2 months, we've tackled the great outside threats to U.S. national security, those big players in Russia and China, as well as lesser threats from Iran and North Korea. But this week, I want to touch on what the domestic threat to the U.S. looks like. So while both sides of the political aisle would like for you to believe the greatest domestic threats come in the form of far-right white nationalist groups or radical left-wing Antifa attacks, the truth is actually not related to perceived racism or fascism within the country. The threat to our communities comes from the increase in violent crime due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the policies that were intended to stop the spread of the virus in order to return the population to some form of normalcy. So what is the data? As a result of the dramatic lockdowns due to COVID-19, homicide rates rose sharply in 2020 compared to 2019. So homicide rates were 30% higher in 2020 than they were a year before. It's an historic increase representing thousands more crime-related deaths across the country than the year before. Of note, aggravated assault was 6% higher. Gun assault rates came in 8% higher. Also of note, domestic violence increased significantly during the early months of the lockdowns. Now, once the lockdowns began to be lifted, those domestic violence rates stabled off. On the flip side, property and drug crime rates, with the exception of motor vehicle thefts, fell significantly. Burglary decreased by 24%, larceny by 16%, and drug offenses decreased by 30%. However, of note, 81,000 drug overdose deaths occurred in the United States in a 12-month span from May 2019 to May 2020. This was the highest number of overdose deaths ever recorded in a 12-month period, and most of those deaths occurred between March and May of 2020. So what is happening? Some experts have cited the protests this summer over the police killings of George Floyd and others, which could have had a range of effects from officers pulling back from their duties to greater community distrust in police, leading to more unchecked violence. Others will say it's just a bad economy. And another potential factor is the huge increase in gun purchases this year. This is due to boredom and social displacement as a result of physical distancing, leading to people causing more trouble. The news website Vox, in an article on the increase in homicides, posited multiple explanations while never attaching a clear cause and effect. Those explanations include, first of all, the pandemic, which is looming over absolutely every discussion about 2020. The main theory behind this explanation is that fear from fatalities due to COVID-19 could lead to all sorts of unpredictable behaviors that experts don't really understand yet. It might take years to explain. Next, Vox posited depolicing as an issue. This is in reference to the 2014 and 2015 waves of Black Lives Matter protests, which protested against police brutality. Officers in some cities pulled back, either out of fear that any act of aggressive policing could get them in trouble, or in a counter-protest against Black Lives Matter. And there is some relation between those protests from 2014 and 2015 to current protests starting in May due to police brutality. The next theory on the table for Vox was a lack of trust in police, which would go back to the depolicing aspect of it. And they posit this with, once again, the 2015 protests. They saw people losing trust in the police, and as a result, they relied more on street justice and other illegal activities to resolve interpersonal disputes. And the same could be happening with the current crisis that we see now. They also tried to explain with the increase in guns. There's a surge in gun buying this year, and this was seemingly in response to concerns about personal safety during the pandemic. This research has shown that more guns mean more gun violence. While there is anecdotal evidence that shows more guns mean more violence, the reverse has also been shown. More guns in some communities can lead to less violence. Lastly, Vox took in the economy. So with the economy tanking this year, some people may have been pushed to desperate acts to make ends meet. The bad economy also left local and state governments with less funding for social supports that can keep people out of trouble. All of that, and more, really could have contributed to more crime and violence. But honestly, it's only speculative. The case against the economy theory is that the recession of the late 2000s, 2009 to 2010, unemployment was higher than it was in the crime wave of the 1980s and early 1990s, but crime didn't spike. Instead, surprising many, it continued to decline. In order to assess these explanations, one must understand the theories behind the effect of certain policies on the decreasing of violent crime and homicides. In 2016, the same organization, Vox, posited some similar theories as to why crime was on a steady decline. What is notable is that some of these explanations coincide with what Vox has said in 2021. That would be more policing, a better economy, and more guns could lead to declining rates in homicide. With that in mind, the two similar explanations, policing and the economy, would lead to the best analysis of the rate increase. The most interesting aspect of the theories was the inconsistent view of increased gun ownership. Evidence is presented to both prove increases and decreases in homicide rates. So in a 2016 study on falling crime rates, some criminologists argued that incarceration accounted for a fraction of the drop in crime by no more than 25%. A 2015 Brennan Center for Justice report estimates that incarceration played even less of a role than that, especially when it came to violent crime. The Brennan Center concluded that the rising incarceration rates through the 1980s had already locked up the truly violent criminals, and the point of diminishing returns was hit even before the crime rate started to fall. However, others lamented the police measure that most consistently reduces crime is the arrest rate. Felony arrest rates, except for motor vehicle thefts, rose 50 to 70% in the 1990s. When arrests of burglars increased 10%, the number of burglaries fell 2.7 to 3.2%. When the arrest rate of robbers rose 10%, the number of robberies fell 5.7 to 5.9%. During the 1990s, crime rates in New York City dropped dramatically, even more than in the United States as a whole. Violent crime declined by more than 56% in the city, compared to about 28% in the nation as a whole. Property crimes tumbled about 65%, but only fell 26% nationally. So many people attributed New York's crime reduction to specific get-tough policies carried out by former mayor Rudolph Giuliani. The most prominent of his policy changes was the aggressive policing of lower-level crimes policy, which has been dubbed the broken windows approach. In this view, small disorders lead to larger ones, and perhaps even to crime. As Mr. Giuliani told the press in 1998, obviously, murder and graffiti are two vastly different crimes, but they are part of the same continuum, and a climate that tolerates one is more likely to tolerate the other. Former Mayor Giuliani made an interesting point. While the crimes are different, the climate of toleration of lesser crime leads to increase in more violent crime, which is what we're seeing in places like Portland and Seattle, where Antifa protests go mostly unreported, emboldening these actors to take on more violent crimes. Now back to New York City. So in the 1990s, Mayor Giuliani increased the police force by 35%, and the numbers of prison inmates during that time rose 24%. While the police force grew, as well as the prison population, homicide dropped 73%, burglaries 66%, assaults at 40%, robbery at 67%, and vehicle theft dropped by 73%. So as some push today for the dismantling of police altogether in the cry for defunding, the policies that New York enacted in the 90s show that an increase in policing can affect the rates between all crime in a location. Now, on the terms of defunding the police, which became very popular this summer, one of the locations involved in defunding the police as a way to decrease crime in a population was in Camden, New Jersey. So Camden made headlines when the city disbanded its police force and rebranded it as a county police department in 2013. At the time, Camden was considered one of the most dangerous cities in America. Poverty and violent crime levels were at record highs, and the city was facing a budget deficit of nearly $14 million. So the city decided to completely revamp its police department. In the early days, the new force ramped up summonses for such petty offenses as riding a bicycle without a bell, parking, and speeding tickets. The increase in policing these petty crimes sparked backlash from groups like the ACLU that says it targets minorities and those affected most by economic downturns. So what did Camden do? Camden, New Jersey, laid off half of their roughly 360 police officers. Arrests plummeted and violent crime spiked. So in 2012, Camden, which recorded 67 homicides and 172 shooting victims, was ranked the most dangerous city in America. And with the city in dire straits, governor of the time, Chris Christie, and state Democratic lawmakers pushed to regionalize its police force, thus taking away the police from the city and making it a county police department. Politicians in Camden lent their support to breaking up the city's all-union police department and replacing it with a larger but lower-paid police force. The city did something drastic. It disbanded its police force and turned the policing responsibility over to Camden County. The county created a new force that, at the time, was expected to replace other local departments in the county. Camden city officers were fired, and when the rehiring went back up for Camden County Police, many of those that were fired opted to apply for the lesser-paying jobs of the new county police force. The new force was larger than the original city force, and the county invested in a massive surveillance system, with hundreds of cameras now being monitored by law enforcement. Camden police also initiated a broken windows approach alongside to community policing initiative. And in doing so, the murder rate fell sharply. So, what is broken windows policing? Broken windows model of policing was first described in 1982. The model focuses on the importance of disorder, i.e. broken windows. When you see a location that has run-down vehicles, run-down buildings, broken windows, you may see more crime in that area. Now, when this happens, the police can play a key role in disrupting the process. They focus in on the disorder and less serious crime in the neighborhoods that have not yet been overtaken by serious crime. They can help reduce fear and resident withdrawal. Promoting higher levels of informal social control will help residents themselves take control of their neighborhood and prevent serious crime from infiltrating. However, a counter-argument for broken windows policing is that New York City precincts that received the most intensive broken windows policing policies during the 1990s were the ones that experienced the largest increases in crime during the city's crack epidemic of the mid to late 1980s. Consistent with findings elsewhere from city-level data, jurisdictions with the greatest increases in crime during this period tend to experience the largest subsequent declines, which would be something of a Newton's law of crime. What goes up must come down, and what goes up the most tends to come down the most. Now, just as polarizing as fixing policing in order to decrease crime rates in this country, economic policies in order to decrease crime rates can become very political. In the impact of economic activity on criminal behavior by the Center for Growth and Opportunity at University of Utah, the study's authors suggest that there are two different potential explanations for why crime rates would decrease during the initial phase of economic increase and why it would increase as the economic rate stabilizes. What the study is trying to find out is, will improvement to the economy then result in a decrease in violent crimes in the country? And so what they found was that the initial economic boom from places like North Dakota, which saw a fracking boom inside of a particular community, coincided with a decrease in illegal activity among the community. However, the rates of crime increased as soon as the actual work began and workers from outside the community came in to perform the more labor-intensive work. The study would lead one to believe that the economic impact on the crime rate is short-lived. Finally, one needs to look at personal security and personal responsibility in response to crime. So a University of North Carolina at Charlotte study provided insights on habits and motivations as it pertains to the importance of security. These findings included, when selecting a target, most criminals said they consider the close proximity of other people. That includes traffic, people in the house or business, and police officer. Also, criminals looked at the lack of escape routes and signs of increased security, including alarm signs, dogs inside, outdoor cameras, or other surveillance equipment. So approximately 83% of the criminals that were asked in the study said they would try to determine if an alarm was present before attempting a crime. Now, this would prove the case in why, during the lockdowns, things like petty theft and in-home burglary fell by a tremendous rate. This is because most home burglaries are a crime of opportunity. And if you have someone in the house, that opportunity for the criminal lessens. So the findings in the study would tend to prove the theory that personal security and increased deterrence measures on a personal level will lead to less crimes personally, however, not within a community. Now, while both economic and deterrence variables are important in explaining the increase in crime during the COVID-19 pandemic, the decrease in police deterrence measures as a result of the lack of confidence in policing is larger than those of economic variables. All factors play a role in increasing and decreasing crime rates, especially violent crimes and homicides. Urgent action is necessary to address these rapidly rising rates. Subduing the pandemic, increasing confidence in the police and the justice system, and implementing proven anti-violence strategies will be necessary to achieve a durable peace in the nation's cities, and as such, a durable peace in the nation as a whole. Increased violent crime rates over the pandemic has led to one of the largest national security crises in the United States. While more studies need to be conducted in the years following the pandemic, it is evident that the combination of a complete economic collapse due to the strict lockdown measures in the early stages of the pandemic, as well as the distrust in policing caused by the deaths of multiple people at the hands of various police officers, and the fracturing of community engagement brought on by social distancing policies, has made the rate of violent crimes increase. Making all of these issues nonpartisan, non-biased, will lead to the improvement of the safety within the nation, within communities, and personal safety. So I want to thank you all again for listening. Don't forget to get your daily dose of unbiased news from Leftover Grounds and join our community of professionals over at groundtruthinfo.com. Until next time, this is Kirvin with your Bolo Brief.